Hello, welcome back to The Reducer. And this week it's on conspiracy theories. Now, normally we all do a load of research, but conspiracy theorists haven't, so we didn't see the point in us doing any. We're just gonna mouth off our opinions because that is what conspiracy theorists do. So let's treat fire with fire and, you know, get stuck in to the idiots. I mean, sorry, let's try and be objective and see what exactly conspiracy theories are, what kind of people peddle them, why, how they gain traction, and why some people seem to want to believe them so much they will ignore, you know, good old-fashioned scientific evidence and proof, like, for instance, flat earthers. What the hell is that all about?
This is Dave here. I've never done a load of research for any of our chats, but yeah, certainly you're right, Alan. No research needed for conspiracy theory. I always, when I come across conspiracy theorists now, if they tell me they're a conspiracy theorist, I just say, "Oh, well, that's what you're telling me," and that tends to put them on the back foot.
Nice. I like that. I had a I was out having a couple of drinks with a mate of mine, literally within the last like 7 days, and we were sat having a chat, and I went to the toilet. I came back, and this couple who were on the table next to us, were chatting to him, and I sat down, and we started chatting, and the conversation, you know, veered towards vaccines, and I thought, all right, here we go, and I, you know, explained that, have you done any research, or have, you know, it's like, well, a bloke who worked at Pfizer for 10 years, he said, 10 years, he said, like 10 years is a lifetime, and like working at a drug company makes you an expert in vaccines. But anyway, I just explained that, well, research is not listening to other people's opinions. Research is genuinely, like, you know, you want to research COVID, go to the Johns Hopkins University website, and you can track the virus, you can see how it's morphed, you can see all the work that's being done around the world on stopping the spread and also on the vaccines. This is actual science on a, you know, on a Johns Hopkins University, medical university website. But people don't want to do that. I kind of get the feeling that a conspiracy theorists, they make their mind up and then they go looking for information to back that already formed opinion. So there's no objectivity at any.
No, they don't want to be proved wrong, in other words.
I don't know. So this conversation that I had with them ended with me saying to, there were a man and a woman, and I just said, look, I said, you do realize that you are, to me, you are in the same company as Holocaust deniers, climate change deniers, flat earthers. Oh, they didn't like that. No, their conspiracy theory. Oh, no, that's real. Those other people are nutters. So I said, it ended with, sorry, I'm totally monopolizing this and I will shut up, but it ended with, I said to the lady and the man, what makes you an authority on pandemics and vaccines? And the woman replied, me, I'm an authority. No one tells me what to do. And I just went, well, that's the end of that then, and turned around and carried on chatting to my friend, like, just forget it.
I love the quote from astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hello.
Someone's been doing some research, bloody cheat.
Well, no, because I was fascinated, before the pandemic, I was fascinated by the notion that people still think the Earth is flat. He said that the great thing about science is it's true whether you believe it or not. and you can apply that to any of these conspiracy theories. And what we've got now, we've just got, especially in the last 18 months, when you encounter these people and you're thinking, what are they on? Where are they coming from? There's almost like a collective mental illness going on. It's like a delusion. It's like a fixed false belief held with conviction that can't be shaken by appeal to reason. And that's the definition of a delusion. I've tried to assess and analyze where it's come from, the idea. And I think it's because of people who we have trusted previously to provide us with information that is deemed correct. And it's current in the news at the moment, but Afghanistan, for example, we were told that it was the base and seat of Al-Qaeda and global terrorism, and that the war on terror could be won if we defeat the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. So we send the troops in and stuff. We're also told about weapons of mass destruction, which didn't exist. That was just a way for Blair and Bush to exercise their little vanity project on Iraq for their own political stature. And it's when that misinformation and untruth is disclosed, and we realize it's been proved it was fake and false, the trust breaks down completely. So I'm thinking that's where it's stemming from. It's big events like that, so people have a lack of trust. So in some ways, what I'm actually defending these people.
Yeah,
I know. There is no arguing against scientific fact, especially from medical expert. Why would any medical expert want to have an agenda on?
They're in the pocket of Big Pharma. Wake up, sheeple.
Yeah, yeah. I just think the whole thing, they're all tied together, whether it's flat earth, whether it's COVID, whether it's the world's being run by lizards, shape-shifting lizards and stuff. I just think it's all tied together, and it's just part of the same mentality, which is almost, it's in the realms of mental illness. It really is.
We're now in a world where basically David Icke pulls bigger crowds than Russell Brand.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't, yeah. I don't know. Who would you have top of the bill? Brand? I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, obviously, there's the issue of social media, which just propagates, you know, to your point, Dave, you know, distrusting kind of established mainstream politics and media. Then you have social media, which enables any sort of theory to quickly get round to Crazy Uncle Mike, who then shares it with his network, and then Crazy Uncle Mike's network, who are, you know, full of head the balls, you know, and suddenly this thing gathers a lot of traction. But it's interesting what you're saying, both saying about psychology. I was looking, there's this study done by Emory University in America, because there's 1 in 3 Americans believe in conspiracy theories. So, you know, and they come out with this stuff. And so this survey actually found that there's distinct personality profiles for conspiracy theorists. One is an injustice collector, impulsive and overconfident. Another is a solitary, anxious figure. And then the other one is a personality disorder, somebody that's had a kind of trauma in their early life and are kind of using, falling back on conspiracy theories to kind of like make themselves feel better. Now, this could be like if somebody's had a bad health kind of diagnosis or whatever, and then they'll kind of like see pharma as the root of all evil. I mean, I don't know, but you're right, there is an element of sympathy there. The other thing is, and this is my own research, it's thick people.
the easily led. Yeah, they hear something, they like the sound of it, and they go, yeah, I'm going to believe that.
And there's a wonderful irony in referring to the rest of us as sheeple.
Yeah,
they're just blindly following nonsense like a sheep.
Yeah. I say that as somebody that's equally as guilty. I mean, not about, I don't believe in any of the kind of big conspiracy theories, but when it comes to football or sport, I mean, if you catch me at the wrong moment, I will construct a reality about how a certain game was lost, or, you know, and realize that it's just born out of ignorance. And that's always that comes through in football quite a lot, where, to Howard's point about having somebody who worked at Pfizer, there's always somebody within your group when something happens at football. I've got a mate who works at Liverpool, and he says, you know, there's always yeah. that. And I think we like to comfort ourselves that things are okay by making stuff up, I assume.
That's a good analogy, actually. The football phone-in is full of ill-informed idiots who express opinions with no... They've got nothing to back it up. It's just how they think and feel about something based purely on what they might have seen on Match of the Day or something. They weren't at the game and they don't follow a team every week. There are similarities between that kind of thinking and the conspiracy theorists. It's a knee-jerk reaction.
It's also a little bit tragic as well, because... You know, I'm not a parent myself, but whenever I'm talking to parents, of which you are, you both are, it's like, it's always, you know, you bring your children up to question, not to just blindly follow, but to question. Always hold people and authority to account. Always question, don't blindly follow. And it's like that message has now become more powerful than actually, no, take the medicine, you don't want to die. And that's a real shame, because I totally believe in questioning authority and not just doing what you're told for the sake of it and asking why. And, you know, that's got me into a lot of trouble over the years, especially as a kid with ADHD. And just that's been, you know, the bedrock which has formed my life. It's been questioning things. And now it's a case of, OK, yeah, question everything, but not maybe if the earth is flat or not. We've done that. We've moved on. We've moved on from there. There's lots of examples on YouTube, which is where all we and that's something else as well. Can we just flag this up, right? If you're talking to a conspiracy theorist and they point you towards YouTube as evidence or any kind of scientific resource, you know, that is at the point where you have won and you just need to highlight to them that any stupid fucker, including us three, can post stuff on YouTube. It doesn't make it real. Peer-reviewed scientific research, that is real. A YouTube video where some bloke goes up in a rocket and goes, yeah, definitely flat, and then comes back down again. No, that's not research.
It's called Dunning-Kruger effect. Are you aware of it? Are you familiar with it?
I have heard of that, yeah.
It's a form of cognitive bias, and people mistakenly think their cognitive ability is actually greater than it is. And it's a sort of bias of it. Illusory superiority, it would be regarded.
Right.
So it comes from an inability to recognise their own lack of ability.
I've got that.
Yeah. I mean, well, you see, it's the guy in the bar just shouting at the telly, and his only experience is what he experiences in the bar or in his neighbourhood, and he forms his opinions based on that. I mean, we saw it with Brexit, didn't we? It was the notion that we're being swamped because somebody's got a Polish delicatessen where the corner shop used to be. Factually incorrect, as we know. And as we're now seeing, you know, we've got shortages of labour left, right and centre because there weren't that many people here, after all, as it turns out.
Yeah, to be fair, we've got a shortage of we have got a shortage of lorry drivers, and Brexit definitely plays into that. But there's also that every country is suffering at the moment because there's a shortage of shipping containers, because one of the largest ports in the world in China has been closed. I mean, US government is telling their population to buy Christmas presents now, buy toys now, because there's going to be a shortage. And
that
I don't
sounds like a conspiracy.
And I don't think the US. voted for Brexit, so it's very easy to use that as a stick to beat people who voted Leave with, but it's also
using it to illustrate kind of the notion of people, their bias was informed by what they experienced. They hadn't done any research into
absolutely. Here's one. The old and we all met these people in the pandemic, or certainly when we came out of the first lockdown for a little bit, when we were allowed to run around in the sun for a bit this time last year. And you meet people who say, have you met anybody who's had it? I haven't met anybody who's had it. And it's like, yeah, that's right. Your personal experience.
That's it. You
are allowing your personal experience to define the world. I haven't met anyone who's had it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have. I've had it. I know people who've had it. I know people who've been hospitalized by it. And I've known people who've died from it.
Yeah.
Oh, do you? Yes. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I. And also, it's funny, the particular phrase that I heard from people is, I don't believe in it. Which really feeds into the conspiracy theorist. Like, yeah. This was something to believe in COVID. Like, it's like, I don't believe in it, mate. I mean, it just plays into that, just using that language. You know, it doesn't exist. I don't believe in it.
Yeah, well, the other classic as well was, it's only a little bit of flu. And I'm like, okay, right. Now, that's because of your age. That's why you think flu is a nasty cold. You don't realize that the last pandemic we had was flu. That was 103 years. That was 103 years ago. And when you turn 50, you get a what? A fucking flu jab. That's what. Because once you're over 50, flu is more likely to kill you after that age. And it's 103 years ago since it was a problem, and it's still here. So, you know, maybe COVID being a bit of a flu means it's also going to still be around in 100 years, and it's maybe is worth getting a jab, or don't, you know, really, whatever.
I agree. And also, I mean, the jabs work, right? I mean, that's the point, is that the vaccine is working. I mean, that's why we're able to function again as a society. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean,
To be fair, I am going to, like you did earlier, both of you, I'm now going to stick up for, anti-vaxxers, because you will hear anti-vaxxers say, well, a vaccine clearly doesn't work because I know people who've vaccinated and they still got it. Mm. And what they don't realise is that a vaccine doesn't stop you getting it. It's a virus. There's no human being in the world that is resistant to viruses. Viruses will be the death of humanity. And, you know, we're a virus with shoes, as Bill Hicks just once said. So the point being is that those people haven't been informed properly. Those people think a vaccine is a cure. And there is a line there that I don't think has been made clear enough. You know, right from the outset, it's been, got to get a vaccine, got to get a vaccine, got to get vaccines will help. Vaccine. There's a certain group of people there who thought that because everyone keeps talking about vaccines, that would be the cure. And then when you get the vaccine, you're cured and you won't get the virus. So there is...
I'm going to throw into the mix. They have talked about efficacy right from the get-go. As soon as these vaccines became available, they talked about the efficacy of each of the vaccines. The one I had, AstraZeneca, was always 76% effective. I've had COVID, but I'd fortunately had both vaccines, and I had what I can describe it as just, it was a mild, it wasn't even an illness. I just felt horrible for a couple of days, mainly a headache. But I put that down to the fact I'd had both vaccines, but I still had 24% of the illness, if you get my gist. Pardon me.
Oh, there's Big Pharma on the phone.
yeah.
You could always put it on mute, mate. Just throwing that out there. The thing is, 76% effectiveness, if that's not made clear, that means that if I think a vaccine is a cure, that to me, 76% of people it cures, and I could be one of the 24% that it doesn't cure. That language still hasn't helped.
Yeah, but my point is, it was never said, this is going to cure everyone and stop everyone getting ill. That was never said once.
So, well, no, it wasn't.
Again, it's that thing about being selective hearing what you want to hear. I remember I bumped into a woman, she says, I'm not having a vaccine until it's 100%. I said, well, good luck with that, because no vaccine is 100% effective.
Yeah,
none. Not even the ones you had as a kid for polio, if you had them. Not yellow fever for going to Saudi Arabia, not 100% effective. So drugs don't work like that.
But I totally agree. All I'm saying is that there is space there for people to be confused, and then that be confused, think that they're, oh, that makes me an anti-vaxxer, and then and that is how they fall into that trap. But also the other thing I love, that I absolutely love, is that every single anti-vax on the face of the planet has been vaccinated at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
You know, simple as that. And the thing is, we live in a society where we haven't had anything like a pandemic for over 100 years. So we've got generations and generations of people who, when something like this happens, just think it's bullshit, think it's a conspiracy. Because, you know, it's like, well, I don't know if you did history at school or college or university, but if you go through history, there's plenty of examples of things coming along and wiping people out and causing havoc, you know, syphilis, cholera, polio, you name it. It's and then there's the man-made shit like thalidomide and stuff like that, which plays into the conspiracy theory as well, because the conspiracy theorists are all like, yeah, you see, Big Pharma, it can't be trusted. So there's a certain amount of history that's lying around that's easy to get hold of that says, yeah, We were due a pandemic, and we got one.
The last one was Asian flu, or Hong Kong flu, as it was known, in 68, prior to this. So well overdue.
Yeah, but I think you're right, though, Howard, about, the kind of lack of belief, because actually, you know, there was a part of me when this started. It was like something, you know, everybody said it's like something out of a science fiction film. You know, when that first lockdown was announced, it's like, this is utterly mind-blowing because it hadn't happened in our lifetimes. And so there was a sort of tendency to think, well, it can't be that bad, you know. And everybody's got their own personal take. It's a bit like, you know, we were discussing earlier, you know, you're an optimist. And if you're of an optimistic, positive viewpoint, you're thinking, well, this can't be that bad. And so all that feeds in. But I think you've absolutely summed it up brilliantly, where you were saying that the kind of doubts that people have, if they have something to latch onto, you know, it's a way that they can end up thinking, oh, that means I'm an anti-vaxxer. It doesn't mean you're an anti-vaxxer. It just means you've got kind of well-founded, understandable concerns about the world you live in. Yeah. That doesn't mean you have to kind of hoist them to, you know, hitch them to a wagon or an organisation that's just, you know, doesn't make sense.
You've just misunderstood. And that's not a crime, you know. It's not, you know, as you said earlier, you know, there's these three people and then there's thick people. All three of us are sat here talking, are making assumptions about what people understand. And it's like, yeah, it's all very well. You can have Boris Johnson there. They, you know, as Dave was saying, they've said right from the outset that 76, you know, it's only got 76% effectiveness. And it's like, well, yes, but you're assuming that people realise that once they've had the vaccine, they are 76% protected. What you are, and with any assumption, you're not making way for other ways of looking at it. And the other ways of looking at it are, it only protects 76% of people because people think it's a cure. And also people think it's a cure. People want it to be a cure. You know, that's the whole thing. They want it to be a cure-all, a silver bullet. It's all done. It's over. I'm back to normal. And unfortunately, you know, that's just not how vaccines work. But there's a huge assumption been made, I think, on the behalf of many governments around the world, that people just understand vaccines, know how they work. And there just hasn't been clear enough messaging between the difference between a vaccine and a cure.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, journalists have some responsibility there. I don't think there's enough journalists with, you know, a scientific background or any sort of scientific knowledge. You know, journalists are deadline, writing towards a deadline, ring up, you know, journalism, I often say, is just ringing people up and writing things down. I mean, obviously, it's a bit more sophisticated than that. But essentially, if you're a journalist and you're writing a story on COVID this week, and if you're a health correspondent of a newspaper, you know, you'll speak to some person, speak to another person, write a story. And I think there was a lack of scientific knowledge amongst journalists, and that is impinging on the message. But broadly about conspiracy theories, the reason why they can't be true for me is that, think about the level of sophistication that we require, just moved away from COVID for a minute, or even with COVID, but like the lunar landings, to have staged that, how many people would you have had to have kind of taken in into your confidence and say nobody knows about this? I mean, there would be, it's impossible. You cannot, run a conspiracy theory.
There's a flaw. It's like going back to the flat Earth. There are about 70 space agencies on the globe, because we live on a globe, not a fucking flat plane. And there's about, I think it's several thousand people work for these 70 agencies. You think there'd be at least one person somewhere going, it's not true. It's not a globe. It's a flat plane. Somebody somewhere would have blown a whistle. Likewise with COVID. Likewise with lizards occupying the White House, shape-shifting lizards. And
well, it's basically you can't get countries to agree on climate change. You can't on trade. You can't get them to agree on ownership of lands, on borders. But all of a sudden, they've all come together to get this, sneak this one
with
thing.
China and Russia.
And guess what? You know about it. Here's how you know it's not. Here's how you know it's not a conspiracy theory. You know about it, because if it was, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't know about it. Absolutely.
Simple as that. You know, and also, it's going back to flat Earth. Get on a telescope, have a look at all the other planets, and tell me the chances of us being the only flat one. You daft cunt.
Brilliant. An appropriate and timely dropping of the C-bomb. Brilliant.
Yes, boom.
We haven't touched on, it's slightly tangential, but we've got the deniers, those people who believe the conspiracy, but as annoying and part of the problem as well are the defiers. So I was listening to Neil Oliver on GB News, and he was saying people on the beaches of Normandy didn't die for me, right, not to wear a mask and all
is
this.
Is that Ian Paisley?
Yeah.
Forgive the accent.
The irony.
And it's like, no, but if you trawl through history, you'll find that photographs from 1917 during the Spanish flu epidemic of soldiers in the trenches, guess what? Wearing fucking masks.
Yeah.
Because they were as fearful of dying from the plague, as it was deemed at the time, as they were of getting blown up or gassed by the Germans.
But also, here's where that theory falls down as well. You know, my relatives didn't, like, you know, die for my freedoms for me to have to wear a mask. It's like, well, actually, I think you'll find that during a time of war, your other relatives who weren't at war, every night were shoved underground into holes, right, to save their lives. Everybody had to switch all of their lights off, and it was called a curfew, and nobody was allowed out. All of their human rights were withdrawn because we were at war. Well, we were at war again, and we still are, with an unseen enemy. I know I sound like a fucking politician, but we're at war with an unseen enemy, even worse. I mean, fuck me, if you could see COVID flying through the sky, that would be great. This is an unseen enemy, and therefore you lose some of your rights during wartime because you have to do what's best for the population. Also, oh, they cut this vaccine up a bit quickly. Again, go back to school. That simple lesson at school where you learn about when there's war times, there's huge leaps forward made in medicine, in science, in battleware, in armory, because everybody drops everything else they're doing and they focus on one thing. And when it's pandemic, every country does that, not just the countries at war. Every country does that. And that's how you manage to get a vaccine in such short time.
Well, they made it sound like it was a stand. They were stood still, like they just sat around smoking and playing cards in the laboratories waiting for something to come along. SARS research was over 17, 18 years in development. So they tweaked what they had. I'm using layman's terms, but basically they had a stack of research done. So when people say, oh, it's too soon, they got it too quickly, it's like, no, they didn't. They've been planning it and working on this for 18 years since the SARS outbreak in Asia in the early 2000s.
It's focus, isn't it? It's you throw the kitchen sink at a problem.
Absolutely.
And you can get a quicker solution. I mean,
so they just sped up what they were already doing, is my point.
It's like the 2012 Olympics.
Well, look, I'd also like to point, it's not my point, it's me recycling what I learned at school when I was 15 in history. It's one of the few things I remember about, you know, any lesson at school, and that is wartime, big advances made. I mean, that's
absolutely.
That's just stock.
Yeah, it's a very good point, though. It's well worth repeating.
Well, I've gone for twice. I'm not going to go for a third time. But the personality types is very interesting, because, funnily enough, I think I might have mentioned that on a previous one of our discussions where we talked about conspiracies when we were talking about social media. I'm doing what I criticize other people for, which is using my own experience to define something. But I know people who are conspiracy theorists, and they are remarkably similar. They love a bit of gossip. And basically, you know, some conspiracy theories are nothing more than amplified gossip.
Yeah. And they like that little bit of power it gives them.
You think absolutely. Makes them feel special. Bit, yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Low self-esteem. A lot of people I know a few of the conspiracy theorists I know have low self-esteem, and boy, it makes them feel important. You can see them, their chests puff up. They feel all superior. Oh, well, you see, Howard, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, well, I believe it now then. I believe this bullshit you're selling, because you've said truth is stranger than fiction, and I've never heard that before.
But I made the point about, you know, the Afghanistan situation and misinformation. But, you know, we've had in the last 5 years Donald Trump in the White House, and he's just reinforced.
Oh, he's just enabled it. Yeah.
He's just completely enabled it. So when you're getting authority figures and all those people around him reinforcing that message, it just gives these people even greater self-worth and power as they see it, you know. So,
well, and I don't know the link between that and populism, but broadly, populism's on the rise, and I don't know whether that, you know, feeds into.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that. It feels like I might be wrong.
At the risk of sounding like a government advisor, could you just could you explain populism for people who might not know what that is?
I guess it's a popular movement.
It could be left or right wing. Yeah. It's not the preserve of the right or the left. It could be either. At the moment, we seem to have a notion. It's driven by nationalism, I think, this notion that the world economy, globalization's failed. We're all suffering as a result. Therefore, you're looking for scapegoats constantly. Let's blame immigrants. Let's blame being in the EU. And it's just an easy, popular message that people can grasp and understand. But it could be left wing as well. Doesn't have to. It's not.
Yeah, let's blame being in the EU. Let's blame not being in the EU.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But it's powerful.
It's powerful. So you could argue, had Jeremy Corbyn won the election, he'd have been a populist left wing government. He'd have been saying things that the right didn't want to hear, and vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a brilliant definition, Dave. So that's a good summary.
Thank you.
It also plays into the fact that I think we're living in times of overcorrection. I know there's another word for it, which I'm struggling for, but we're living in times of overcorrection. We're living in times of where, well, things were over here. Oh, fucking hell, that's terrible. We feel really bad. So let's smash them all over here.
Are we talking wokeism?
And actually, we need to be kind of here.
Are we talking wokeism?
Wokeism. I think we're talking wokeism. We're talking inclusivity. We're talking equal rights, equal pay, which, again, to hear some people speak, you would think that there has never been equal pay in any arena. And I can speak as somebody who spent 25 years in sales. And whether you've got tits or a dick, it's about whether you close. End of story. And it's been like that for fucking ever. So don't be selling me this bullshit that everyone's had this tough life. And also, every manager I ever had in sales was a woman and very, very good at it. And directors, women. So this idea that there has never been any kind of equality ever. I'm just saying my experience in working in sales has been equal pay and women in power and women in positions of senior power as well. Now, I'm not saying there wasn't a glass ceiling they couldn't get through because they were a woman. And I'm not saying there hasn't been, you know, there isn't huge injustices in other industries, which there clearly are.
I think that's teases up nicely for the next topic.
I've totally gone off on a tangent on inclusivity.
No, but it's because we were going to talk about entitlement this week. Well, we weren't actually. I forgot. We were going to talk about some of these themes, and I think that's brilliant for the next one. But so sort of try and bring it back here.
A trailer. I just wanted to say one thing very quickly before you, Dave, and that was I'm all for inclusion. It's just that not everything is for everyone.
Well, yes. We're all good at something, but we're not all good at everything. I mean, I'm shit at a lot of things. And I think you can end up striving to be good at something that you're never going to be good at. But that's, I think that is for the next podcast. For this one,
you're right.
Just to kind of try and pull back what you were just saying there about your experience.
Yes.
In sales. Well, that I think summarizes the whole sort of discussion really, is that we've all got our own, we only see the world through our own eyes because that's all we've got really.
Yeah. Which we've criticized other people for earlier.
Yeah, we all have to kind of look more broadly. And I think, you know, conspiracy theorists aren't all, as I said earlier, complete fucking idiots. By any stretch, that was just a gag. But a lot of them fucking are. But
get your information from validated, trusted sources, not the internet.
You can use the internet. It's a great resource. But just make sure it's information. It's not opinion from somebody who you've decided it is important and clever.
Barry452 on Twitter.